Well, you recognize that song? He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got you and me, brother. You and me, sister. You want me to sing it? Yeah, somebody said, yeah, are you kidding? No, you do not. He's got the tiny little baby. He's got everybody here in his hands. You know, when you were a kid, it was really easy to believe that. Wouldn't you say that? That God's got the whole world in his hands. And then you grow up and you get jobs and you pay bills and you have all these problems that come into life. And, you know, things don't turn out like you plan. And it's easy at that point to ask the question, does God really have the whole world in his hand? Life, when it starts happening as you grow up, it doesn't seem at times like he's got the whole world in his hands. In fact, I was just at a retreat with our association leadership, and we were up at Silver Spur. The last day of the retreat was Wednesday. It was Monday through Wednesday. And on Wednesday, as I was coming into the meeting place, one of the pastors, as was walking out, I know him, I said, you know, how you doing? It looks like something's going on. He said, I just got a phone call regarding a family who's in our church. Two of the people that were in this pickup truck, they're 19 and 20 years of age, they died. They were in an accident. The pickup went down a ravine, and they both died. There was a third person in the car, he said, and the third person is in grave condition right now. Actually, they didn't find the pickup for 12 hours, he said. And so, you know, I'm going to try to do my best to deal with this situation. He said one of the young adults that died was the son of one of our deacons. Now, that's life, isn't it? Bad news, things change. It could be related to death of a loved one. It could be related to job loss. So many different things. A bad grade in school could be connected to you applied to college and you didn't get into the college that you wanted to get into. It's all enough as we go through this life. It's all enough to possibly cause us doubt in our relationship with God. Really wonder, does the Lord have the whole world in his hands or not? You know? How does all that work out? Solomon struggles with that very thing. As we've been working our way through Ecclesiastes, today we're in a section of scripture in Ecclesiastes chapter 8 and verses 16 and 17, and then the first 10 verses in chapter 9, where he is just trying to figure out, you know, how do you view life when it doesn't make sense? How do you view this relationship with God when it doesn't seem like he has the world in his hands? So this is what Solomon writes, and if you brought your Bible, you might want to turn there with me, but also there's a message note sheet that has this passage in it. This is where he begins as he jumps into this very big question that we all face in life. You know, God's part in things that we don't understand. Solomon says, when I applied my mind to know wisdom and to observe man's labor on earth, his eyes not seeing sleep day or night, then I saw all that God has done. No one can comprehend what goes on under the sun despite all his efforts to search it out. Man cannot discover its meaning. Even if a wise man claims he knows what God's doing is the idea, he cannot really comprehend it. So here you have the wisest man on earth at the time saying, I can't comprehend God's work. I can't comprehend his ways. Even diligent observation, he says, verse 16, night and day, you know, searching things out with a lot of effort. He still couldn't make sense of things that God had done, or things that just don't make sense, things that don't add up, things that he cannot discover the meaning of. You see in verse 17, can't discover the why behind the what of what's happening. Have you ever had that struggle in your life? Maybe you got it right now. You thought that, you know, it seems like we should be able to have some kind of answers to these hard questions in life where things just don't make sense. I mean, we can look at the scriptures and see a number of circumstances where, you know, Lord, what were you thinking? What were you doing? Take Abraham, for instance. If you studied Abraham's life, you know that Abraham was called by God to leave his home And God gave him a promise that he was going to take him to a promised land, and he was going to, through his seed, he was going to bless the world. So Abraham got the land, but he didn't get the son, and they waited for years to have a child. They didn't have a child, so they finally decided they would help God out with his promise, which is always not a good idea. If God gives a promise, you don't want to, you know, shortcut the promise and fix it for him. They tried to fix it their way. But ultimately, in God's timing, it was God's plan for him not to have this son of promise for 25 years. Now, if you ever asked yourself the question, you know, couldn't have God come along, and certainly he could have, and earlier given him the son instead of making him wait for 25 years and then potentially him falling into sin, and the result of sin is still with us to this day in terms of his lines that came out of his family, two different lines. I mean, when you look at that whole situation, couldn't have God have prevented that and you know, put off a whole bunch of stupid choices that were made that resulted in pain and hardship? I mean, what do you do with that? When you see those kinds of things, how do you make sense of it? And that's what Solomon's going after here. There's just stuff that happens in life that God is doing that we can't comprehend. We can't even figure it out. You know, it just seems like there's no reason. And what Solomon's going to go after here is a couple of things. Number one, he's going to basically saying to us, when life doesn't make sense, we got to remember that we're in God's hands, that God is working, that he's working out his way and he's working out his plan, and he knows what he's doing, and he has a timing, and he has reasons behind what he's doing. As I was working on this message, I got a call, or not a call, it was a messenger from Facebook, a message from a pastor who I'm mentoring, who asked me if I would pray for him because he was going to have head surgery that day. And this is a young pastor, and you want to ask, Lord, what's going on? This is a guy who's having a big impact for you. Why this? Why now? And I also got a call from my brother who asked me if I would pray for his daughter who was going in for gut surgery. She was having all kinds of complications, all kinds of problems. Both of them asked me to pray because they both believe what I believe, that God knows and God hears and God answers prayers. And they asked me if I would join them in praying for both of those circumstances. But when you hear something like that, do you ever ask the question, why this person, why this young mom, why this young pastor? Because humanly speaking, I can't comprehend that. It's hard to figure that out. And so Solomon is reflecting on those kinds of things, and he says in chapter 9, verse 1, so I reflected on all this, and I concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands. There it is. The righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands, but no man knows whether love or hate awaits him. Now, we would like to take off of this verse, the last part of the verse, right there. You know, we would... Man, knowing we're in God's hands, that sounds great. But a righteous person, a wise person, they're living with the uncertainty of what's going to come in the future. Is it going to be love or is it going to be hate? Because he's saying here, it could be both. A righteous person, a wise person can experience both. They can experience love and hate. So even good people, he's saying, even good people, good spouses, good parents, good bosses, can be hated. And of course, the obvious answer there, or obvious example there, is Jesus. As good as it gets, he was hated. But regardless of what may come, they are, he's saying, verse 1, they are in God's hands. These righteous and wise people, they are in God's hands, even though they can't figure out what's going to ultimately come. Go to verse 2. He says, all share a common destiny. All share a common destiny. Now he's talking about the righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean, those who offer sacrifices and those who do not. As it is with the good man, so it is with the sinner. As it is with those who take oaths, so with those who are afraid to take them. We all have this common destiny. And when you look at that, you ask yourself, if you're a person of faith and you're connected to God through Jesus Christ, and you believe that because of that connection, you're going to be spared of the worst destiny, hell, if that's what you believe, when you first look at this passage here, this is kind of a little disturbing. All share a common destiny. What's he talking about? Well, he's talking about death. He's talking about how all of us, it doesn't matter who we are destined to die. The righteous and the wicked will die. The good and the bad will die. The clean and the unclean will die. Those who offer sacrifices and those who don't offer sacrifices are destined to die. The good man and the sinner, he says, they're destined to die. Those who take oaths and those who are afraid to take oaths, they're going to die. In fact, he says in verse 3, this is the evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. The hearts of men, moreover, are full of evil, and there is madness in their hearts while they live, and afterward, they join the dead. There's the destiny. The destiny of death is going to overtake all of us as we live under the sun, as we live here on planet Earth, and it's an evil that just comes on all people. You say, why does it come on all people? We got to go all the way back to Adam and Eve. Because Adam and Eve sinned, and sin, the result of sin was death came into the world. The wages of sin is death, and death is the consequence, Solomon is saying here, of evil and sin and madness. But he adds this in verse 4, anyone who is among the living has hope. Even a live dog is better off than a dead lion, for the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no further reward, and even the memory of them is forgotten. Their love, their hate, and their jealousy have long since vanished. Never again will they ever have a part in anything that happens under the sun. What's he saying? He's saying, well, if you're alive, that's a good thing. You're better off because you're not dead. Even a wild dog is better off alive than dead. That's fascinating. And when he's talking here about a dog in their world, they're talking about these diseased mongrels that ran in packs. We're not talking about, you know, here's Heidi or whoever your dog's name is, who we pamper and they stay in the house with us and something like that. He's talking about these animals that are out of control, and he says they are better off than a dead lion, the king of the jungle. They're better off than the king of the jungle. The king is dead, but not a dog. And he says in verse 4, and we're better off if we're alive because we still have hope. And we're conscious, verse 5, and we have opportunities in this world to make an impact, verse 5. But if you're dead, verse 5, you're done and you're forgotten. If you're dead, you're done. So it's the end of it. And the things that you're most passionate about, your assets, love, verse 6, and your liabilities, hate, and jealousy, well, all of that has vanished. It's disappeared, he says, when life ends. So if you're dead, you're done, and you're done making a contribution on earth. What's Solomon getting at? Simply this, everybody dies. The good as well as the bad die. Lovers die, and haters die. Now, you would think, and this is the thing he's going after here, that a person who is righteous and wise, you know, they're going to get a better deal on this death thing. But Solomon's saying, no. When death seems unfair, somebody dies young. Somebody who's righteous dies. When death seems unfair, he's saying, remember, verse 1, you're in God's hands. You're in God's hands. You know what this tells me is that in Solomon's day, people were struggling with the same question we struggle with today. And that is the question, why do bad things happen to good people? What is that? Why her? Why now? Why him? Why? A month ago, Christianity Today did an interview with Stephen Curtis Chapman. Maybe you recognize that name. He's a Grammy Award-winning musician. He's been one of the most decorated artists for the past 30 years. Since he released his first album, he sold millions of records to date. He just published a memoir titled Between Heaven and the Real World, My Story. And in this memoir, this book, Chapman opens up about his marital difficulties, and he speaks about the death of his 5-year-old daughter, who was accidentally run over by one of her teenage brothers. And so here he is dealing with this kind of stuff that's a part of life, a righteous person, a wise person. And he says this in part in the interview. He said, after her death, speaking about his five-year-old daughter, we couldn't help but think, did we miss something? Were we wrong to adopt her? If we hadn't, would she still be with us? We were really trying to do good things, and then this happens. Shouldn't we have got a better deal? But, he goes on to say, when I look closely at the world, I realize suffering is very much a part of the human experience. We live in a culture that can be pretty insulated from the widespread suffering that others experience. And with that can come a sense of entitlement. We say, hey God, I've done all these things. Shouldn't I get a better deal? You know how the Chapmans got through all this? How they're getting through this? They truly believe God is working. He says in this interview, there's another story being told. And if I didn't believe that, I would be extremely bitter and an angry man. And then he went on to say this, when there was nothing else to hold on to, I heard myself saying, God, I'm going to trust you and worship you, and that's not because there's an audience watching. I'm going to bless your name, whether you give or take away. I'm going to hold on to the one who's holding on to me. And I'm not going to let go. When death seems unfair, Solomon is saying we got to remember that we are in God's hands. Now skip on down to verse 11. Because he comes at this from another angle. He says, I've seen something else under the sun. The race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise, or wealth to the brilliant, or favor to the learned. But time and chance happen to them all. Moreover, no man knows when his hour will come. As fish are caught in a cruel net, or birds are taken in a snare, so men are trapped by evil times that fall unexpectedly upon them. Now, I think we can really identify with this section here because we like to think that our athletic abilities, our physical strength, our academic brilliance, our accomplishments, that doing all of that and, you know, achievements in that way can control the outcome. That we can control the outcome. That we can make happen what we want to see happen. If you just work harder, we should be able to get what we want. Well, Solomon's saying, well, think again, Silicon Valley. He says, the race doesn't always go to the swift, the fastest. And the battle doesn't always go to the strong. And food doesn't always come to the wise. And wealth doesn't always go to the brilliant. And favor doesn't always go to the learned. But, and then he says, time and chance happens to all. And it's interesting because when he's talking about time and chance, he's talking about age and, you know, timing and what happens in life. And unfavorable conditions come into life and health changes and accidents happen and extenuating circumstances come and there's an unexpected disaster. And when they come, that's going to change things. That's going to hinder that desired outcome, that expected outcome, or that worked for outcome, or even worse, verse 12, it could take a person's life. So that one day out of the blue, when you least expect it, like a fish caught in a net, or a bird hunted down, something might catch you by surprise and take your life, or take away that which you've worked for. At this retreat, one of the speakers was Marshall Shelley, and Marshall has been a part of Christianity Today and Leadership Journal for years and years. In fact, he was at Leadership Journal for 34 years. He was the editor of Leadership Journal for 34 years. Now he's the director of the Doctor of Ministry program at Denver Seminary. Godly man. And boy, he shared a little bit of their story and some of the hardships that they've come through. But one of the things that connected with this exact text was something that he shared that went back to his college days, because in college, one of his strongest aspirations was to play on the football team. And the first couple of years, you know, he had to basically ride the bench. He was a quarterback. And so he was looking forward to, you know, the junior season, the senior season, and being the first-string quarterback and, you know, out there on the field. Well, things got started, but he got injured. And he was, you know, out of the game. But he wasn't just out of the game for 6 weeks. He ended up being out of the game for good. It completely changed his future. It changed his college experience. In fact, at the time, he said that shortly after I was injured, I had an English teacher say to me, and I was in his class, he said, you know, I wasn't really working that hard in the English class. I had a lot more in me that I could give, but I wasn't giving. And this English teacher saw it. He saw that I could be a writer someday. And the teacher said to me, you know, Marshall, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You're not getting an A in class right now. But I will give you an A in this class if you will write an article and get it published and get paid for the article. Well, that was all the incentive he needed. He wrote the article, he got it published, and that was the first article ever got published. I mean, went on to have a writing career, but it all changed because of the injury in football. And Solomon is saying, you know what? Time and chance happens to all. Call it sovereignty, the providence of God, call it whatever you want. But you've seen this, and maybe you've experienced this in your own life. In fact, do the names Tiger Woods or Steve Jobs mean anything to you? Tiger Woods, what do we know about Tiger? We know that his career was going along just fine, and you know, he was winning majors and one tournament after another, and he was breaking records, but then he was injured. Things changed. And he hasn't been able to get back at it. He has not won a tournament since 2013. Time and chance. Call it whatever you want to call it. Things have completely changed. As much as he's tried to make this thing work out and have surgeries and all the rest of it, it's not working for him right now. And of course, Steve Jobs, 2011, he died in his mid-50s when he was at a wonderful place in his career. He was completely knocked out of the race. Tiger's hoping to get back in the race. What's Solomon's point? Thirdly, it's this: when things don't go as planned, and there's a good chance that things are not going to go as planned, because that's just a part of life. We need to remember that we are in God's hands, that he's working out his plan in our lives, which means when he works out that plan, we don't want to freak out. We don't want to go into depression. We don't want to especially let go of God and, you know, walk out on God or any other thing that we can do at this point. What we want to do is what Solomon writes about. Now go back to verse 7. We want to do this. We want to go and eat our food with gladness and drink our wine with a joyful heart. For it's now that God favors what you do. I mean, that's interesting, isn't it? That right there sandwiched into this whole section here where he's talking about how life is not going to go like you plan for it to go, how death happens even on righteous and wise people, how things are out of our control, which we talked about last week, that we need to surrender control because we're not in control. Now, if there's something we can control, fine, you know, our attitude, our response. But what Solomon is saying is that we're still, in spite of all this stuff that life is going to bring to us, we need to learn to enjoy life even when life isn't enjoyable. Because life can suck the joy out of us. Would you agree with that? Absolutely. Things happen as like that. Well, that wasn't what I planned. And the first thing that can go, as we mentioned last week, was the first thing that can go is joy. And so Solomon says, wait a minute. Whatever's going on in your life right now, listen, you need to be able to enjoy the food, you know, savor it. And verse 8, and always be clothed in white and always anoint your head with oil. Now let me ask you, do you think he's being literal there in verse 8? Is he, if he's being literal, then you guys are all not appropriately dressed today. Anybody here all in white? I don't think so. I don't think he's being literal. I don't think that he's saying you better have oil on your head all the time, just as like you should be wearing white all the time. You should have oil on your head all the time. What he's using here are two figurative images. And you understand these images. The white is a figurative image of celebration. So when you go to a wedding, a bride is wearing white because it's a time of celebration. She's not wearing black, you know, it's a time of mourning. No, it's a time of celebration. That's appropriate. And oil was also used with celebration. It was actually used with feasting. Oil was not used when a person was in mourning, when they were in sadness and grief. When they would come out of their mourning and then go into feasting, one of the very first things that they would do is that they would anoint themselves with oil. And so Solomon is speaking about how we ought to always be living with a sense of celebration of what God is doing in his work in our lives. And then he goes on to verse 9 and he says, and enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days, for this is your lot in life and in your toilsome labor under the sun. Now, if you're married, this is an application for those of us who are married. We shouldn't just be enduring marriage. Oh, this is, you know, such a bummer. Are you kidding? This is marriage. This is meant to be a celebration and joy marriage. All the days, not some of the days of your life, but enjoy marriage all the days of your life. And if you can't enjoy these days, then take a look at that love word that's used here, whom you love. Is there something messed up in the love that you share? And is there something that can be worked on there? But enjoy life. Don't just see this as a dismal thing. Are you kidding? Enjoy life with your wife, with your husband. And whatever your hand, verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for in the grave, and here we're talking about Sheol, we're writing in the Old Testament here, we're talking about the place of the dead, which included a place for the good as well as for the bad. For in the grave where you are going, there is neither working, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom. What's he saying? Once you're dead, you're done. So work while you can. Before it's too late, put your heart into it and enjoy the work that you have to do. C.H. Spurgeon said it this way, if you do not wish to be full of regrets when you are obliged to lie still, work while you can. Don't stuff your sick bed with mournful reflections that you wasted time while you were in health and strength. Crowd as much as you can into every day and postpone no work till tomorrow. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all thy might. Solomon is saying that here. Learn to enjoy life, even when life isn't enjoyable. And the key to enjoying life, even when life isn't enjoyable, is to remember, my life is in God's hands. What better place is there for it to be? My life is in God's hands. And since my life is in God's hands, I can enjoy life. My friend Jay Cardi believed that. Jay lived for the past 4+ years with myeloma cancer, and then here near the end, lymphoma cancer. Guy came into my life when I was a young pastor. He would get together with me and he would encourage me. He was always an encourager, just had a deep love for people, a deep love for God. Some of you may recognize his name. He played for the Los Angeles Lakers. So he had a great career, but then he built on that career a platform of sharing the gospel with other people. Well, this is him in the hospital a month ago. His son wrote us that were on his prayer list and included this photo, but also included this note. He said, you know, over the next few days, the plan is for him to gain strength before the doctors start him on another round of chemo. But then he said this, but his sense of humor is still intact. He's been able to remain hopeful and positive. In the hospital. His sense of humor is still intact, and he's still able to remain hopeful and positive. How is that? How's that possible? Well, it's because Jay was trusting in God's hand. In fact, he wrote this a month before his son wrote that email. Jay wrote this, some trust in horses, chariots, money, and all kinds of stuff, including doctors and medications, but our trust shall be in the Lord. Now, did Jay not believe in doctors? Of course he believed in doctors. That's why he was in the hospital getting the best medical care that he could get. But he ultimately knew that it was going to be up to God how long he lived. Jay died this Thursday, just a couple days ago, just past noon. But he died still believing the Lord was in control and that he was in God's hands. Friday, I had the experience of meeting with a bunch of others as a part of the Soul Care ministry. Some of you may remember that a couple years back, I was a part of a soul-keeping ministry for a year there with some others, and it was really, really encouraging. And so from time to time, they hold these retreats. So they held a retreat on Friday at the Jesuit Retreat Center here in Los Altos. Any of you ever been there? Maybe you've seen it. Some of you, a couple of you, know about it. It's a beautiful place up here in Los Altos. It's on the side of the hill. You can look over the whole area. It's incredible. And so we were there just talking about dry bones, that dry bones passage, and God breathing life back into dry bones, which he does repeatedly in our lives. And we had this great experience, but as a part of the experience, I heard Alyssa's story. And Alyssa, who's one of the participants, has brain cancer. She was there. She's had two brain cancer surgeries already. She's done uncountable numbers of treatments. And you could tell that, you know, she's physically challenged right now. But she was there nonetheless, and she was enjoying every aspect of this retreat. And I say enjoying, and one of the ways that that came out was they gave us a prayer exercise with a labyrinth. If you've seen a labyrinth, it's just a series of rocks and paths, and you can use it as just a symbolic of the presence of God. And so they said, so as you walk this labyrinth, just be focusing on God. Take this as a time of prayer and think about how that you are in his presence. We're always in his presence, but let this labyrinth be a reminder of his presence so that wherever you walk, you are reminded that the presence of God is there. And then when you get to the center, then be reminded of the fact that the center here is Christ. And so we took our time and we walked through this, and it was really quite a fun and very interesting and I think encouraging, replenishing experience. But then after we came out of it, they had us all gathered together and they just had a little bit of sharing there. And Alyssa shared. And she said, you know, I'm just so thankful that I can be here. And you're thinking, I'm sure you feel that way right now. And I'm thankful that you're all here. And I'm thankful that I sense the presence of God here. And this has been really good for my soul. And then she said this, and this has been an enjoyable time. And there it was. In the midst of the conditions that she's living in, she's still yet able to enjoy life. As she lives in the moment, because God is there, she realizes that she's in his hands. So we had this little aftermath snack, and I sat next to her and I said, Alyssa, you said something that connects with what we're going to be talking about on Sunday. And I just want to thank you because you are the epitome of what I hope all of us can take a step forward in. And that is in circumstances in life that we can't understand, that we can't discover, that just make no sense to us, that we would still remember that we are living in the presence of God, that we are in his hand, which means we can enjoy every moment of life that he is giving to us. C.S. Lewis talked about this a little different way in his book, Mere Christianity. I think I've shared this before, but it's so good and so encouraging. I wanted to end our time this morning with this. This is what C.S. Lewis said. He said, imagine yourself as a living house. God comes in to rebuild that house. At first, perhaps you can understand what he's doing. He's getting the drains right. and he's stopping the leaks in the roof and so on. You knew that those jobs needed doing, and so you're not surprised. But presently, he starts knocking the house about in a way that hurts abominably and does not seem to make any sense. What on earth is he up to? The explanation is that he's building quite a different house from the one you thought of, throwing out a new wing here, putting on an extra floor there, running up towers, making courtyards. You thought you were being made into a decent little cottage, but he's building a palace. He intends to come and live in it himself. God's building a palace. It's a majestic work in his hand. It's a home better than any home that we have lived in up to this point in time. And knowing this house or our life is in his hands means we can enjoy the journey. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you that you have us in your hands, your trusted hands, your loving hands, your purposeful hands, your skilled hands. And there is no better place for us to be. May we find comfort and hope, security in your hands, even when we don't understand. Especially when we don't get it. And may we enjoy life to its fullest. Life with you and life with others. And life where you've planted us. As we vitally connect with you. As our life is changed in this connection with you through your Son, Jesus Christ. And it's in his name we pray.